Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Horse Geeks podcast, where we look at horses and riders from the inside out. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer, and with me today is the lovely Deb Romero, Alexander Technique instructor and developer of optimal posture. So today's topic is about moving beyond dualities to find balance. So what are dualities and what is balance? So my first impulse when we talk about dualities is opposing forces, different sides of the aisle, this or that. It's a choice between opposites, right? So duality is one thing and it's opposite thing. And how do we move beyond that? And why do we want to move beyond that?
That's a good point.
Right? So the reason we want to move beyond it is to find balance. Balance is always an integration of duality. So what's your first take, Deb, on how would you describe duality? Anything you want to add to what I just said?
It reminds me, I don't know why, ping pong.
Yeah. One player opposing the other player.
Back and forth and back and forth. And where is the calmness in that? Or a rhythm or whatever?
There could be a rhythm. There could be an interplay, because balance doesn't necessarily mean the body is standing still.
Oh, that's really important.
So balance is a concept of stillness, but it can be within motion. So imagine
concept of stillness.
Right. So for example, if the two opposing ping pong players were hitting the ball back and forth with an equal amount of force, mm-hmm. then it would create a rhythm, which is a balance between the two opposing forces.
I like that, because there is a rhythm to it. It even almost has a sound.
You Absolutely.
Know, like horses' feet hitting the ground. Sometimes you can just hear that there's balance or not balance or tempo or whatever. The rhythm, you can hear it.
It's a frequency.
Yeah.
Yes. So balance, if we look at it from through the lens of physics, balance is a static equilibrium between opposing forces. So the sensation of stillness comes because all of the forces opposing each other, and this can be in multiple dimensions, yeah. right? But if we think of just sort of a left and a right equalizing forces in opposing directions, there becomes a static or still equilibrium between equalized opposing dualities. And so the sum of all the forces is zero.
I like
so
that.
In other words, yeah. you know, plus one minus one equals zero.
Yeah.
Plus two minus one puts one bit of force on one end or the other. And that creates an imbalance, which sometimes we want, sometimes we don't want.
That's true.
Okay. So like your example of algebra, what is algebra to you?
Algebra makes sense to me because all your, instead of it, you know, people look at it as, oh my gosh, look at how long that is or whatever. It's just figuring out the equal sign. You just make it equal on both sides. That's all it is.
Right.
So however you do that, by plugging things in to make it equal. So I guess, you know, with horses too, it's the same thing.
Yeah. And that, like, that's such a great example, because that's where math actually can be creative, because you're just creating an equilibrium on both sides of the
exactly, yeah.
equal sign. Right. So you're balancing your equation. Mm-hmm. So this equals that. right? Yes. Or even Einstein's huge theory of relativity is E equals mc squared, which is energy equals mass.
Yes.
Right? So we are a force and we are mass. That's all living bodies. And it's interchangeable because it's equalized both sides, even though energy is non-physical and mass is physical. Those seem to be opposing forces. When they're equalized, then we have manifestation. We have something, right?
I get the vision of an atom.
Yes. Yeah. Or even when you do a balance sheet in your bookkeeping, in your accounting, the whole point of a balance sheet is to see where you have liabilities and where you have assets, but it always has to equalize.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So well, that brings up the thought, you know, but are we trying to balance the books down to the cents, and we're wasting all this energy to find two pennies? Or are we looking at the bigger picture? I'm thinking about that with horses. Are we, because I used to be that rider that was the nitpicky, you know, trying to get the horse. And that just would always make my horse explode.
Yeah. And I've evolved into going, balance is a moving target. It's an ever changing. So yes, on paper, we can get it down to the penny, but is it really worth it? And could it be an evolving balance sheet?
We're evolving.
You hunt for that penny tomorrow, or you find it somewhere else. But that's when it comes to horses, when we think in terms of balance as opposing forces, that influences the movement of the body. Right. So when we manage the forces of motion, we influence the mechanics of the body and vice versa. When we influence the mechanics of the body, we change the forces of motion. And balance feels incredibly good to both horse and rider because we've equalized the forces in a way that there's a zero sum net force acting on our body, which translates into stillness. It's easy. You don't get hurled around in the saddle. It's just easy to sit, walk, trot, and canter when the movement of the horse is balanced. It's
and
easier.
And I hear that from people when I'm working with them. Is it sometimes they can't come up with words, but words like easy, effortless,
efficient.
All of that. And what I see in people, and I'm sure it happens in horses, is when the closer they are getting to that level of higher balance, they start to breathe deeper. You know, it's, I don't know how to explain it. It just, when that organization, you get closer to it, the central nervous system just eats it up.
Yeah. And it's like the image of the yin and yang.
I like that.
You know, it's black and white, but it's combined into one circle, into one glyph or whatever you would call it. So that feeling of balance is something that I think innately we seek. I think it's almost instinctual because it's energy efficient and it feels safe. So like a balanced rider can really help an unbalanced horse because equalizing the forces internally in our own body can be done even if the horse has very bad unbalanced movement. So that's why certain riders can really help horses where other riders will struggle on the same horse. It's because a good rider is learning to equalize those internal forces or our, you know, alignment with the force of gravity becoming more equal. And that's what brings ease to the horse's ability to carry the rider.
Yeah, so, because if you have those opposing forces not jiving, what happens?
Well, let's say, do you mean for the rider or for the horse? Well, we'll just start with if you have an unbalanced rider who has a habit, which I'm sure you see in your work all the time, people have a habit of overusing their right side or their left side.
Oh, yeah.
Or they have a habit of being sort of top heavy with how they just normally carry their own body weight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All of that.
So what you work with optimal posture is sort of becoming aware of how we manage internal forces, whether we're sitting or standing or walking or lying down. There's always a way that we can shift weight, change muscle tone that changes the distribution of force in our own body. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's when you, and sometimes maybe this is going to sound strange, but it's like all the wrinkles go out of their face. You know, I mean, there's even a level of tension in the, you know, holding pattern in the face, or they'll take a deeper breath, or, you know, just those things, the central nervous system just picks it up quick.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I mean, that when we equalize forces, even a little bit, then we start to feel the ease of balance. And I think that's innate. I think all bodies seek balance. It's like a homeostasis sort of feeling. So if you have an unbalanced rider on a horse that's even perfectly balanced and well-trained to a high level, the imbalance in the rider's body, that lack of awareness of force management, will create, just through weight and mass of our bodies, just sitting on the horse, will create a compensation pattern in the horse. Because if the force of our body is unequal as a mass and weight on the horse, then the horse has to compensate for that uneven force. So in other
words, that's interesting you bring that up. Yeah. Cause I wonder every time I get, since I've got three horses, I wonder every time when I get on, am I causing that?
Yeah.
Do all my horses have that? Do all my horses do that? Is that me?
Well, and it's so dynamic and it's so fast that it's kind of chicken and egg. I think the horse can create it in the rider, and the rider can create it in the horse. But it's going to take the rider's brain to work out of it. The horse will not be able to figure it out. The horse will just do the best it can with the load it has, however that shows up. So when we talk about moving beyond duality, what I see with like horses in training is the biggest problems across the board, any problem you can think of, has to do with having too much on one side of the equation versus too little on the other side of the equation. It doesn't equalize. So for example, you know, I used to think poor me because I always bought hot-blooded horses. And I thought, you know, dealing with a fast, anxious horse is really tough. Those people who have horses that won't go forward have it so easy.
Yeah, right.
Right. And then I got a horse that didn't want to go forward. And I went, oh, this is way more work than I thought it was. And the horse doesn't want to go forward. So that imbalance between the horse's desire to never go forward or never slow down, either side is a big problem because it's not equalized. Right? So balance to me in the forward motion of the horse is equal parts self-propelled and self-controlled.
Oh, I like that.
Right. So it's just a description of what the movement feels like, that the horse is self-propelled forward, has a desire to go forward, but can maintain self-control over the forward motion. That would feel great to all of us. That's when sort of the pushing and the control of balance, or the control of the movement, become equal forces. So technically it's called pushing and braking, just like in our cars, B-R-A-K-E. And so when the body parts related to pushing, managing the pushing force and the braking force are equalized, we get the result of a horse that's self-propelled and self-controlled, which is an easy horse to ride. Mm.
Yeah, so that to me, I'm thinking of it in my head, would be a horse that easily, you can easily manage the forces.
Yeah, so you get go
forward
from,
with ease, and they stop with ease. It's not this struggle for either one. Is that kind of what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, so the simple algebraic equation is go equals woe. Go equals woe, right? And one of the things I'll do with people is go, like, if you count, you put on a light leg aid and you start counting 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, and you just see how many, you know, how long does it take from the horse to actually move forward from a light leg aid before you increase the leg aid or add the touch of a whip. And then on the same horse, you ask the horse to halt and you start counting the moment you start asking with the lightest aid. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. And it's so funny because when I quantify it and give it give numbers to it for people, all of a sudden they realize it takes 10 to go and 1 to woe, or it takes 1 to go and 10 to woe, right?
Yeah.
So then how do you...
And I've had that in one ride.
With, oh, yeah.
You know, with my big mare yesterday, I got on her and she had no woe.
Yes.
What do you do with that? It's like redirect, redirect, redirect. And then about 30 minutes into the ride, she had no go. So.
Yeah. And that is, you know, it makes me crazy.
Amazing.
When I open a horse book or some kind of, I read some article on horse analogies, I get, you know, I just have the huge eye roll or the, you know, face palm, because I go, it's just all horses, just like all people, have to explore both sides of duality in order to find balance, right? So I go, you can't pigeonhole that a horse is lazy. Because I go, the lazy horses under pressure are the first ones to blow up in a huge way. That's not lazy.
No,
right?
That's athletic.
Right. Or when you get an anxious, fast horse to be calm, they suddenly don't want to go forward.
Exactly.
That's normal. Right. So it's like you can't pigeonhole the horse's desire, because we all come with a full deck of cards. It's like we all do. And when you're seeking balance, the way to find balance is exploring duality.
I see that in people, because they usually go from overuse, overcontracting. Then they have to go to literally no tone. And I don't have a clue how to move anymore. And then you kind of build on that. Well, oh yeah, there it is a little bit. Oh, it was over here for a little while. And until it finally gets that, and it's that frustration of the ping pong.
Yeah, yes. And because it's bodies are moving targets, finding balance is always sort of an equalization, but it's like if you take a really stiff horse and you start to make changes, the first thing that happens is the stiff horse gets really unstable, wiggly, right? Because they're learning how to change their movement. And instead of just stabilizing the body with excessive muscle tone, they're going to go through a transition where they start to stabilize the skeletal coordination, which causes the muscles to become more supple. So the muscles become super supple and the movement gets very unstable for a period of time before you find that zero sum balance where it is supple and stable.
Yeah, I keep getting the vision of, I think you've talked about this before, you know, like dropping a pearl into a water basin. And the pearl still stays calm and the water trickles out and does the rings. So I wonder how much that internal stillness, is that what we're looking for? Is that balance, that internal sense
yes.
of being still?
Balance always feels like stillness because okay. if we, whether it's mental or emotional or physical,
that's a good point.
It doesn't matter because there are emotional forces that where we can have too much of this or not enough of that. And that feels terrible. It creates anxiety or mm-hmm. angst or depression because we have an imbalance in emotional forces. Right, which can be intimately linked with what we're thinking about. Right, so the
yes.
thoughts and the emotions sort of get very linked together. So one way out of emotional distress or imbalance is to redirect our thoughts. We still have to wait for the emotions to change. But if you think of severe imbalance emotionally, what they used to call manic depressive, right?
Okay.
From mania to depression. That is a terrible state for our body because it lacks balance. When we're imbalanced emotionally, we can feel happy without being, you know, a maniac. And we can feel... we can feel sad without getting into depression,
right?
So we're less extreme in the opposites, in the polar opposites. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So with every duality, when you're finding balance, we necessarily have to sort of bounce. Like I think of it more like a teeter-totter. Right. Have you ever, as a kid, you stood on a teeter totter to make both sides equal?
No, I never did that.
You never did that? That was one of my favorite things to do.
Was it?
Yeah.
That's probably, that's
yeah.
why you're so good at what you do. You started a long time ago.
I always like walked on the edge of things. I liked balance. I liked the feeling of being on a balance beam or, you know, I just liked it. So on a teeter-totter, if you have a huge adult and a little kid, it's a problem.
It's a problem.
Right? If you have two people of the same weight, that's where the teeter-totter is sort of fun. It's that back and forth. Right?
And there's that rhythm that we talked about. It's kind of like you get a rhythm of movement or you get to that place where it can just be still on both sides.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what I used to do in the, like, I think I'm showing my age, but in the old playgrounds, they would have these huge wooden. Plank teeter-totters on these steel bars. And I would stand in the middle. I would get
wow.
on the teeter-totter and stand in the middle and try to find where I could keep the teeter-totter level.
Wow.
And now they have a toy called I think it's called a balance board. That's sort of a micro version of the same thing, but it has a rolling fulcrum. So the fulcrum isn't stable. The
oh,
fulcrum
we need to
is
play
rolling.
With that.
It's a fun board. I think it's for practicing your skateboarding skills, but, but that equalization always creates stillness. So when I stood on the fulcrum of the teeter totter, I could just shift my own weight and put each side up and down, or I could equalize it. Right. So
that I think that's important to realize that there's still movement. It's not
yes.
a rigid thing. It's not static.
It's dynamic.
Sense. It's very dynamic. That's what I think I see in a lot of people, and I'm sure riders do this too, is this they want to hold it. You know, they don't want it to go away. And then they start to tense and try to manually manipulate that force.
Right. Because as far as force management goes, bodies have three planes, right? We're a three-dimensional body. So we can think of three teeter-totters, right? That intersect
<That'd be fun. laughs>
in our center. And this was, it came naturally to me, probably because I did that a lot as a kid, stand in the middle of the teeter-totter. But when I ride, it became very clear that when I'm thinking about forces, there's a teeter-totter sort of in the middle of the horse's four legs where the saddle sits is the fulcrum. Mm-hmm. But there's a teeter-totter that goes left to right through the horse, one that goes front to back, and one that goes up to down. So it's this three-dimensional teeter-totter, which I could really personally wrap my head around. I went, oh, that makes so much sense to me. And and so in motion, you're trying to equalize the left side and the right side, the front mm-hmm. side from the back side, the forces that go up and the forces that come down. And so as a rider, we feel when we've equalized all three dimensions in our body or the horse's body, because we get zero sum net force.
Yes.
Right? Which is stillness, which feels easy, which mm-hmm. means we don't work hard. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's kind of the physics explanation using the teeter-totter metaphor of, you know, what we're constantly battling is an imbalance of force.
Yes.
Right? So it, like I said, we can talk about it in the kind of mental, emotional realm or the physical realm. And it doesn't matter because the forces impact us all the same.
This is true.
Right. And, you know, physics has to be kind of explained in metaphors unless you want to do the math, which none of us want to do the math. But we all feel forces. As soon as you ride, that's why we ride. We like the feeling of a moving force. And so balance is simply a task of exploring dualities, because only by exploring too much of this, too little of that, do you know what's just right. It's like Goldilocks.
I was going to say right? the same thing.
I know. Just...
I was thinking the same thing. This is going to Goldilocks. I
going
just
to
know
Goldilocks.
It.
So the problems, like, you know, when I talk to riders, the top 10 problems are my horse is too fast. My horse is too slow. My horse turns right, but won't turn left. I can get the right lead, but not the left lead.
The left. Yep.
Right. My horse is too tense or my horse is too anxious. My horse comes at me aggressively or my horse won't pay attention to me. Mm-hmm. All I'm saying here are a whole bunch of opposing dualistic pairs of opposite problems. And so we can explore both sides. Like it's not to put a label on one or the other,
right?
But what feels bad to us and what feels bad to horses, what we don't care for, what doesn't feel good, is to an imbalance. So when we have too much of one thing and not enough of another, that's where we get stressed. That's where our horses get stressed. So that's the land of problems can be boiled down to you have dualistic forces and one side has more than the other. Your algebraic equation doesn't work.
Go back right? to the drawing board.
Your books don't balance. Right? Or there is no more bipartisanship, right?
So right.
Even in politics, we talk about that because people can get very dualistic and severely attached to one side or the other. But where democracy works the best is bipartisan, kind of an agreement or finding that comfortable place between opposite opinions, opposite agendas, mm-hmm. finding a meeting of the minds. So we can look at balance on all kinds of levels and just take the perspective of, maybe I have to experience it extremely this way, but be open to experiencing the extreme opposite knowing that that ultimately leads to the middle.
Mm.
Which for me was like, I just kind of relaxed and went, it's not good or bad, right or wrong.
I think that's important.
It's sort of just an experience. Mm-hmm. It's an exploration. I don't have to get so attached. I can just relax and go, oh, we're on this side now. Oh, now we're on that side. And it just sort of brought a slight level of, I don't want to say detachment, but more of an acceptance of what is, which also felt better.
Yeah, it's not right or wrong.
Yeah.
Good or bad. None of that. I think if we take that out of the equation of riding, it would
help a lot.
Be a better
Yeah,
because better conversation with our horses.
I think when we think in terms of right or wrong, we're sort of anchoring ourselves on one side of the teeter-totter and getting stuck there. And we're no longer willing to explore the other side of the teeter-totter. And so it kind of feels miserable because we perpetuate the problem. It just becomes this stuck place of perpetuating what is and not thinking it could ever be any different.
I hear that a lot because, and we all do this, we all focus on, and I think we've talked about this in a previous podcast, is what's bothering us or what's painful. People will come to me and say, well, I have this injury and this injury in my knee and my neck and my, and we tend to live there.
Well, and that is, it has served. Our survival as a species,
right?
To focus on what's wrong rather than what's right. That is true. But we're operating at sort of an instinctual level when that becomes our primary focus.
Yeah.
We're not using the higher part of our brain. We're not using the, you know, massive intelligence that comes with being human.
Right.
We're just sort of stuck in our limbic brain.
Yes.
The lizard brain.
And I think I see that a lot. I guess that's part of competition, you know, because they have, I'm thinking, right ways to do things and not so right ways to do things.
Because we're judged.
We're judged. We're that judged. Word. I gotta please the judge. Oh, I remember those days.
Yes. Yeah, we set ourselves up to be judged. So, of course, there's the feeling of right and wrong, good and bad that comes with that.
Right. Yeah. But if you think about it, high-level athletes, they don't go out and do what they compete in. They cross-train. You know, they're not just going out and swimming all day long. They're doing other things to get balance.
Yes. And I think that knowing that balance enhances the physical use of the body as well as the mind, if you are working on balance in motion, you're going to enhance the performance of any sport. And you can do that before you go get judged. You know what I mean? That's something you can do privately at home. But yes, we have to practice what we're going to do in our competition. That is part of it. But if we only do that and we don't look at how are we balancing the mind and the body while we're doing our performance tasks, that's where we can start to get into trouble. That's where we start tipping one side of the teeter-totter down too far.
Right.
And sometimes just looking at it, standing back and sort of taking a broader view, like I said, if you just imagine there's this intersecting three-dimensional teeter-totter that you ride, I go, to me, that's pretty fascinating. I go, so when you perform or you compete, what you're doing is balancing that internal teeter-totter while you're doing your performance tasks. That's how you tap into the potential of talent that any horse has or rider. So those are kind of two different parts of training. And I specialize in the inner teeter-totter part, because there's plenty of trainers out there that specialize in the here's how you perform part.
Yes. Yes. I think my work is more about the inner teeter-totter of the human. Yes. Sounds like a topic.
Yes. Yes. So coming full circle, moving beyond duality. Moving beyond duality doesn't mean avoiding duality.
Oh, good point.
I think we have to experience duality before we can find balance. I've just like relaxed about that completely. And it used to really bother me if I had a horse that was chronically too fast and they suddenly became too slow. I used to think, oh my God, I've just created a new problem.
Right.
Right. I thought I've ruined this horse because I substituted one problem for another problem. And then when it happened, horse after horse after horse, I went, oh, this is just how it rolls.
This is how it goes.
This is just how it goes. So now every time I get a new problem, I go, yay, we're on the path of overcoming it. Right.
Yay.
So as soon as I have a new problem for that specific individual, I go, we're on our way to balance. And what I find is, like, we could take a simple example of the too fast, too slow, because that's a big problem for every horse owner. Your horse that was chronically too fast, you use the strategies, you work with it, you finally get the horse, you sort of make going fast more work than it's worth, in a sense. And the horse chooses the option, finally, of, well, then I'm just not going to go forward. Right? So you go, okay, new problem, that's progress.
So I like now, that.
So now you use really different strategies to work with a horse that won't go forward. So we have to change strategies as the horse finds balance, because on one side of the teeter-totter, certain strategies work very well. But on the other side of the teeter-totter, they don't work at all. You need complete opposite strategies. But what I see is, even with extreme horses going between the worst cases of fight and flight, right? This is a great example. I was at a horse rescue and they had this young paint horse that was getting really aggressive in the barn and becoming dangerous. So I put this young horse, knowing with a fight defensive pattern, I need to get the horse kind of away from me. So I put this horse, I'm working with this horse at liberty in a round pen. And every time she tried to attack me, I would sort of use the whip to just protect myself, not to do anything to the horse, but say, no, not here. And then she would get mad and she would take off and go flying around the edge of the round pen, right? And then she'd get tired of running and she'd come and try to attack me again. And I would just defend myself and say, no, you know, you're not going to bite me or strike me or run me over. You're going to stay out there. So I had a lunge whip to protect my personal space. And every time I told her, you're not going to attack me, she'd get mad and she'd take off again and go into high flight. And within an hour, she went through that extreme pattern, attack, run, attack, run, attack, run. But with each iteration of it, the energy started to become less extreme.
Ah.
And she started to wind down. And so pretty soon, instead of full on charging me with an open mouth and, you know, ears pinned and coming straight down my alley, she would just look at me and pin her ears.
Right? Oh, improvement.
Or she'd just try to come in a little and I would say, no, keep going. And then she went from blasting around at a full gallop to cantering, to trotting, to finally walking. Right. But that's a great example of what I see all the time, is that we and horses have to sort of bounce between dualistic problems before we find the middle of the zero sum, the stillness, the calmness, the equalization. It's like we have to explore duality. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yes. We have to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. That's so when somebody tells me that they have a problem, usually at the same time they tell me, but my horse would never.
And
I go, no, you have this problem because your horse never.
You're right. Exactly.
Yes. So I think relaxing about duality is, and kind of watching it or observing ourselves or the horses explore duality. I think that's how we move beyond it.
I do too. Instead of thinking it's got to be in this little container.
Yeah, because I think aiming for perfection always lands us on one end of the teeter-totter.
Exactly.
Never in the middle. So when we think we're going to go from zero to perfection by controlling everything, we always land on one side of the teeter-totter or the other.
Yes.
If we think this is going to be messy, but it's going to be interesting.
I always tell people it's going to be messy at the beginning. Just get used to it.
And the truth is it's always messy.
It's always
because
messy.
Even a well-balanced horse that's really trained to use its body well and a rider, once you're in motion and you're actually doing something, even if you're not competing, if you're fox hunting or riding in the mountains, the terrain and life is going to throw forces at you that constantly have to be managed and balanced and equalized. So we never, ever, ever get away from it. It's a constant adaptability of equalizing. Yes.
That was the word I thought of, be adaptable.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So once we know about it, we can relax if we find ourselves on one side of the teeter-totter or the other. And it might be uncomfortable. It is for most horses and most riders. It's uncomfortable to go sit on the other side of the teeter-totter.
Yeah.
It's like, ooh, this feels weird. This is different. But I think it's very necessary to allow the experience of the opposite in order to authentically realize balance.
Yes, I agree.
And that's how we move beyond duality. I go, just embrace it.
Yes.
You know, or at least relax about it. Anything else you want to add, Deb?
Like, that's good.
What about with working on people? Do you find all of these same concepts kind of apply when you're teaching people to manage their bodies internally?
Yeah, most of us, we do the same to ourselves that we do to our horses. We, you know, I hear a lot, is this right? Is this the way I should do it? You know, that kind of conversation is, they think there's a right and a wrong way when there isn't. It's just, can you explore options?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And dualities.
And try this and try that and see.
And dualities are black and white options.
Yes.
And between black and white, there's many shades of gray.
Yes.
So,
and every person, which I'm sure horses, gets to whatever level of balance they get that day, completely different than somebody else. It's not linear, like an algebra equation, but you know, sometimes I'll go to somebody's head and neck and with another person that might not work. So, you know, being open to that adaptability of, well, let's explore here and let's explore this to get to where we're going.
Yes. And that exploration of going, there's not a right or wrong way to use my arms. There are many options, but am I using both arms in an equalized way? Or am I taxing one and underusing the other? That's what creates pain issues.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I think that I like that topic today about, because even when you look at personal development, a lot of personal development is sort of that moving towards a state of equilibrium.
Yes. Whatever that is for you today.
And it is unique. It's entirely unique. It's entirely individual. I think we can have a common goal, but when we understand dualistic forces and the objective of balance, but it gives space for every individual to get there in their own authentic way.
Yes.
Yeah. So and it's not always.
Not to be punished for your own path, you know, that there is no right or wrong way to get there.
Yeah. And I actually just had this conversation the other day with a client who asked me about how do you turn the horse? And I go, oh, because she was asking about inside leg or outside leg.
Oh boy, here we go.
And if you ride Western, you turn from the outside leg. But if you ride English, you turn from the inside leg. And I go, well, how does the horse know?
I guess, really.
A series of cues, right? Condition response, you could do that. But I go, dynamically, you're turning a force of motion. You're channeling moving forces, right? So I go, it depends on how the horse does it, whether I use my inside leg or my outside.
Exactly. I like that.
I got no clue. Yeah. So it's like I saw a t-shirt, you know, inside leg to outside rein. That'll be $50. Dressage trainers, right?
Yep, that's about it.
Yeah. But it's just not that simple. Bodies are not that simple, and forces of motion are not predictable.
No.
Yeah. So exploring duality and trying to find equalization or a zero sum of stillness, that is reliable.
Yes.
That makes sense. Actually reliable, and you can work with what you've got.
Yes. Everybody can work with what they've got with that.
Yes. Absolutely. All right, my dear, I think we will wrap it up and thank you all for joining us for another Horse Geeks podcast. And please like, share, subscribe, comment. Love the comments.
Love comments or ideas.
Yes.
Yes.
And hopefully we will see you next time. Thanks, everybody.
Be kind.